Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour here. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 9:30. Hawks pregame comes your way then. Tip at 10 o'clock from Sacktown. We will get back to your calls immediatamente, 404-726-0929. If you're on hold, stay there. You'll be first up. But first, we got to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Rob Bradford, Odyssey MLB insider. Rob, Falcons fans are as mad as Braves fans were last year, so we're currently dealing with that situation going on my very busy phone lines, but I wanted to have you on. Walt Weiss, we'll start there. Braves do what the Braves do. They keep it in-house. They keep it in the family. In your opinion, was that the right move for the organization?
Yeah, I do, and because I think of what I – and first of all, it's great talking with you. Always a pleasure, and I will say this every single time. My apologies for saying that Jonnu Smith – or not Jonnu Smith, was who was it? Oh, the edge rusher was going to be actually good for the Falcons. So my apologies to everybody in Atlanta.
Oh, Matthew Judon. Yeah, yes.
Matthew Judon. So I missed the mark on that. Like, I missed the mark on a lot of things. But I do think that when managers, you know, I have no problem with experienced guys. I have no problem with running it back, you know, with familiarity. I've seen it work. I think that one of the things that we've seen in Final Fours for the last 3-4 years is that you have had a lot of experienced managers. And I'm not saying that it's been exclusively experienced managers, but you have had a lot of experienced managers. And I think there's something to that. As long as that manager can understand what the strength is, what the weakness is, how to delegate, and a big part of it is also have the other people who are going to be able to go out in the clubhouse and fill in the gaps where they can't fill in. I mean, let's be honest. You know, like Terry Francona, Bruce Bochy, these guys, it's not like they're changing their persona, changing their personality to fit in with the 20-somethings. No, they know what's important. They set the rules, and then they go from there. So I don't have a huge problem with it. I know that people like new. I know that people like to turn things over, especially when things don't go well. And then they also look at these other teams that have the guys just over 30 managing teams, and that's exciting. I get that. But I do think there is something to be said for the skill set that he brings.
They also brought in new pitching coach from the Mets, ironically. They brought in a couple of coaches from the Mets. Jeremy Hefner, who was credited largely with getting that 24 team to the NLCS with, you know, rubber bands and glue, essentially, for a pitching staff. Do you believe in him in that pitching lab that they had over there in New York to translate here in Atlanta?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the one guy who left the Mets that you talk to everybody who covered the team or was around the team. They were like, wow, that was a surprise. They couldn't understand why they let him go. They understood that they had to turn things over a little bit. But his reputation was pretty good. And on top of it, he's a good guy to talk to. I always love guys who you can actually talk to as human beings and get, you know, where they're coming from or where they're going, all of that. I think with the Mets, their problem really wasn't, I don't think it was with Hefner. I don't think it was with their approach. I think it was with their personnel. I think that they went with the whole idea that we don't have to pay for the stud starters. We don't have to get those guys. We can roll through a bunch of pitchers. We can roll through a bunch of relievers. We can do this and then get to the postseason because we did it the year before, even though a guy like Sean Manaea fell off a cliff at 200 innings. And we saw it. I mean, they were cruising until mid-June, and then it just went 180 degrees. So I do think it was a personnel thing. I think I am a firm believer that you have to get top of the rotation guys and then build off of that. That's not what the Mets were doing.
Speaking of which, the Braves certainly need a starting pitcher or two, as a bunch of their young studs went out last year with injury, and we know Sale and hopefully a rejuvenated Spencer Strider can anchor the rotation. But is a guy, you know, I don't know, is a Dylan Cease a likely option? The Braves, I think they're sixth in payroll right now. I don't know how much of a budget they're going to give Alex, but they do need another quality starter, Rob.
Well, talking to Alex in amongst the recycled air here in Las Vegas, it was clear, as I, you know, I wasn't just to me, it was to others, you know, what the priorities are, right? It was get that pitcher, that reliable pitcher, My sense was it wasn't just going to be sort of a stopgap one-year veteran guy. I think they are looking probably for something along the lines. I don't know if they're going to be able to get Cease, but something along those lines. And then, of course, a shortstop, which is a little trickier and probably would have to come in a trade. But, yeah, I mean, I think that he's very, very high on what Chris Sale is going to do going into next year. But you have to be wary of it. I mean, you just do. I love Chris Sale. I love what he's done for the Braves. I love how he's rejuvenated himself and he was able to come back, actually pitch at the end of the year. But still, like, you can't go into it and say there's no question about it. He's going to make it through a whole year. That's a dangerous game to play. And so, as Scott Boras said numerous times in his very quippy way, Dylan Cease is a perfect guy to you're going to be able to run him out there over and over and over and again, because there's not a lot of guys in baseball who's pitched as many innings as he has over the last few years.
Talking all things MLB and Braves with our buddy Rob Bradford. Make sure you check out Baseball Isn't Boring, one of the best MLB pods going out there. You mentioned shortstop. I was a little surprised Kim opted out of his deal. It was for a decent amount of money, full season, to prove yourself here in Atlanta after a strong finish. Is he going to get, you know, $75 million in the open market? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that probably what they're looking at is the other options that are out there. I mean, it is so weak. I mean, it really is. So if there was a strong shortstop class in free agency, maybe he does do it. But there really isn't much. And even, like, people will say Bo Bichette, but you know, the more people that I talk to, they say, well, you know, is he a shortstop? Like, is he? Like, he's a really, really good hitter, and he probably can be a really, really good second baseman and third baseman like he was in the World Series. But, you know, I don't know if he's the anchor shortstop. That's the way he's trending. So to come back to it, I think that that's just what the market bared out. And I think if you look at the Braves, what they have to do, I do think that that has to come in a trade. I really do. I mean, if you're identifying that this is a priority for you and your options in the free agent market are what they are, you have to go out and look to fill this gap with a trade.
How much should Ronald Acuña DH next year?
Well, I think he should, because one of the things we desperately try to figure out, like, what we can learn from seasons and especially postseasons. And what we've learned is you got to get guys to the finish line. And it, like, sometimes you don't have that option because you're fighting tooth and nail to actually make it to the playoffs. But I got to imagine that if you can get this guy to the finish line in good health, feeling good about himself, as long as you can fill in the other gaps, then do it. I mean, it's the same thing as the catcher position, right? So I think that why not? Why not? It's more pitching for me. Like, if you can get your pitchers to the finish line so that you can actually function in the postseason, great. But when you have the best player, one of the best players in baseball potentially, and you know that you can go on a run, we saw it. I mean, I talked to Seattle guys today, and they were saying, like, okay, what did you learn from the postseason? He's like, you got to have the dudes. Like, we can talk about contact rate, we can talk about home runs, we can talk about all that. But ultimately, it's the Vlad Guerrero Juniors and the Acuña Juniors. Those guys, you got to have the dudes. And you got to have the dudes in the right state of mind and the right health when it counts the most.
Both Cy Young Award winners just announced within the last hour, Tarik Skubal back-to-back, Paul Skeens in the NL, and they both could have new homes this offseason. Who is more likely to be on the move?
Skubal. I don't think Skeens is – I think there's a 0.0 chance he gets moved. You know, I talked to Sherrington yesterday, the Pittsburgh GM, and I said, what's it like to get these calls? And it's like, yeah, I get a lot of calls, but the calls last 1 second, and they consist of me saying, not interested. And somebody said to me, he's like, well, at least there's calls. He's taking the calls. I'm like, well, I take spam calls too. Doesn't mean I'm going to remember them. And so it's. I think that they're going to keep calling and he's going to keep saying no. I don't think there's any semblance of a possibility of him getting traded. Skubal is a little bit more interesting. Skubal is a guy who, you know, obviously it's uncomfortable for Detroit because it doesn't seem like they're remotely close to getting an extension. You get this deep into it, forget about it. I mean, unless you're just going to just make a historic, they have to make a historic run at him. I don't know if they're prepared to do that. And for a team that's trading for him, though, that's the problem, is that you know this is a Juan Soto all over again. He's a Boris guy. He's only going to, you're going to have him for 1 year, and that's going to be it. Are you willing to give up what it's going to take? That's a tricky proposition. And so I don't think either one will get moved, but School Labs absolutely is the more likely guy too.
Headline, Dombrowski has, quote, good conversation with Harper. I mean, he's not going anywhere. Harper, like, is he even that desirable at this point in his career? I guess.
No, and they have enough. You know, I think that we went from looking at the Phillies for the majority of the year and saying, what a perfect example of how a clubhouse should be built. What a perfect example of how a team should be built. Look at this. Like, they got it all going. They got their guys, the 30-somethings. They know how to win. This is going to be their year. And then, obviously, at the end of the day, we have all this drama. But I think what Dombrowski understands that there was a foundation there, and Harper was part of it, and a big part of the foundation. He is probably going to lose. I mean, Real Muto, you know, they might lose him. Schwarber, I mean, I can't imagine them losing him. I think they would burn the city down if he left. But, you know, there's always a chance. So I think that what Dombrowski looked at Harper, even with all that chaos, I think he still looked at him as like, hey, you know what? You're still an anchor to what we're doing, because we certainly aren't going to blow this whole thing up.
All right. Before I let you go, unfortunately, I did want to get your opinion on this Guardians pitching situation. I think the most important question to ask is, do you believe these were two isolated incidents?
No, unfortunately, no. I mean, it's hard to think that they are, right? And that's the problem, and that's the tricky part of this whole, this gambling thing has so many layers to it. And really, during the season last year, you know, I talked to enough guys, you know, I talked to Lucas Giolito a few different times about, you know, the threats that he was getting, that the players were getting, how this had just amped up exponentially over the last year. So that's a piece of the puzzle. And then you have that, when you have players actually doing this sort of thing, everybody's under the microscope. And I will say, you know, Scott Boras was all over the place today, but one thing that they said was, should be understood, which is, he's right. Like, any time, because of these guys, every time a pitcher, like, slips out of his hand and throws a ball 55 feet, they're going to be like, oh, did he do that on purpose? Which is unfair to the pitchers, unfair to the players. But this is the avenue that they've opened up. And if the genie is out of the bottle, Major League Baseball doesn't have any desire to put it back in. I mean, you can limit the prop bets, fine. But still, this goes back to even before the gambling was legalized. They had partners with, you know, gambling companies, and they didn't even want to talk about it. But, you know, they were still doing it because they knew that's where the money was. The money's going to keep coming in. The gambling is going to keep going. All you can do is just keep pounding in the heads of the players. Say, listen, you look at this guy. Look at what he did. He did basically, I saw someone say this, that he basically did the equivalent of an autograph signing. He ruined his career. He made that much money. So just understand that it's a stupid thing to do.
Rob, great stuff. We'll be checking out Baseball Isn't Boring. We'll talk soon.
Always a pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. That is Rob Bradford there, Odyssey MLB Insider. Coming up, we'll take your calls, 404-726-0929. Right back to you, Falcons fans. You heard the comments of Raheem Morris today. I think there was a lot of sugarcoating of the situation going on with QB1. What do you feel about this situation, Falcons fans? Back to the phones, 404-726-0929. We'll also hear from Raheem Morris as he sat down with Dukes and Bell. Busy rest of the show coming your way till 9:30.